Welcome to this interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and I'm very pleased to be joined by my dear friend, Dr. Alan Keyes, today, who I have not had the opportunity to speak with for quite some time as we were building this studio and working out the bugs and a lot of other things. But, oh, he joins us today. It's a breath of fresh air. Dr. Keyes, it's an honor, sir, to have you on. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, it's an honor to be with you, Mike, and I want to thank you for all. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do my program if it wasn't for the wonderful work that y'all do and the support we've gotten on the Brighteon TV network and the success that it has achieved. So I want to thank you and thank you for having me on and thank you for being you because you're just a remarkable human being who at this critical time in our history is dedicating yourself to actually addressing the crisis. That's really quite wonderful.
Well, we're doing our best and we're going to need your help today because we're in a real crisis. That's what I wanted to ask you about. But I have to say, Brighteon.tv would not exist without the work of you and Bob Denny and others who I'm not sure they want to be named, but Alan, you are integral to the fact that we are here doing this. So thank you for all that you've done. Meeting you was a pivotal moment in my life, and I'm not afraid to say that publicly. So thank you for all that you've done.
And well, you're welcome. God bless you.
Well, you as well, sir. And here we are at a crossroads with our country. You and I both, we love America. We love humanity. We have compassion. We have honesty and ethics. And yet we are being ruled over and in some cases, I would argue, psychologically terrorized and threatened and coerced by very evil, bad faith actors who claim to be working for good, right? And are the very existence of the United States is at risk. How do you see the current situation and what we're facing?
Well, I'll be frank. And I haven't always felt this way. As a matter of fact, most of my life, I did not feel really strongly that there was such a difference between the two parties that we had, that one of them was kind of the focal point of evil for the country. But I think in the course of the last 20 years or so, and particularly with the advent of Donald Trump, I think the Democrat Party has shown its true colors. And unfortunately, it's being monopolized now by people who are ideologically the opponents of the founding premises of America. They don't believe in government of, by, and for the people. They actually believe in a government that is modeled after all of these commie-style Nazi fascist governments that where power is in the hands of an elite party or group, and everybody else is supposed to do what they're told or else.
Right.
And I think, unhappily, that mentality has been dominating the environment as we still see this phony prosecution of Trump, driven by what? Not by anything that is really. I mean, you got a guy who's in office as a district attorney, should be worried about crime, has neglected all of it, so he can go after the allegation that Trump paid hush money to some prostitute. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, now, these are the people who tell us all the time that the sexual stuff, it's okay by everybody, right?
Yeah, especially during Clinton and the 1990s. We were reminded over and over again, oh, you can't care about Bill Clinton's sexual habits. That's his own private business. Remember that?
Right. And it's not even established, of course, because I want to make this clear, that Donald Trump was guilty of anything. If he paid somebody to get off his back, that might be because he had better things to do. And you and I both know that that can happen to people, whether or not they are guilty of the crime. But this guy is treating him, Bragg, as if he's already been convicted of something. But what they really want to do, I think, is to try to do a couple of things. Drive a wedge in his base so that the allegations being associated with things that are, I think, anathema to a lot of Christian minds and people, his base consists of a lot of people who have that mindset. And they're hoping that they will see this as some kind of discreditation that can then solve the problem of Donald Trump. And I think he's going to be disappointed because I've been impressed by the fact that a lot of people who aren't even on Trump's side or anything have just been talking, and Dershowitz is in particular, has been talking about this as the sham that it is.
Yeah, but
And we'll see
Dr.
whether
Keyes,
it works out there.
we've already been through these allegations against Trump. You know, in his first campaign for his first presidency, when he's known as a womanizer, he's known as someone, you know, who would flippantly say, you know, I grabbed her by the bleep when he thought he was off camera. That never mattered to anybody. It wasn't that Trump is going to be the moral trophy for America, mm-hmm. but rather that he's going to defeat the swamp and get things done. We yeah. don't care who he slept with in order to get here. I mean, that I think that decision was already made, even by evangelicals. You know, they may not agree with the womanizing decisions that Trump made or how many women he slept with. That's not what they espouse, but that doesn't mean that God can't use Trump to accomplish some good deeds for this nation, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I think these people are basically just trying to do something that will stir up dissension, division, and disappointment in the Trump base. I think he's right, by the way, to be thoroughly convinced that that's not going to work.
I agree. It's going to backfire.
Because I think a lot of people, including myself, had to think it through very carefully and pray over it before we could see in Donald Trump somebody we were going to vote for, right? And I think that what mostly has convinced me is that when he got into office, he did something politicians don't usually do. He did exactly what he said he was going to do.
I know, it's so unusual. I
mean, that is really unusual. And I think that is what has impressed people and confirmed a judgment that at the end of the day was made by the common sense of the American people. And instead, the Democrats are relying, I think, on fear and intimidation, even though in the context of the COVID crisis, I think they've already shown their true colors.
Well, look,
because it was mostly the reaction of Democrat governors and others like them that showed people who were glad to get the opportunity to inflict total control over everybody else.
That's the right term for it. I'm glad you chose that word inflict, because that's exactly what they're doing. You know, even I thought at some point when some of the more grotesque examples of post-birth abortion, for example, were aired, or even genital mutilations of children, I thought surely the mainstream Democrat Party would reject that. They would call it out. They would say, this is not us. That's some fringe. But no. This has been embraced as mainstream Democrat philosophy, which is murder babies, or if they survive birth, chop off their genitals. And it's beyond insane. And it shows that there is a deeply rooted evil that has infested many people who call themselves Democrats. Would you agree with that?
I would, unfortunately. And some of them, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe not something they've thought through. And people can get caught up, I guess, in the passions and partisanship of politics. But I think we really have to become a people who will reflect on how what we're seeing and what people are saying and trying to do relate to the things we fundamentally rely on. And that's why I think the way they handle issues like the abortion issue, issues like crime against persons and violence that is being done to them and so forth. I mean, this is a fellow who, by the way, the fellow Bragg, who is going after Trump, who has basically put all that stuff on the back burner.
He did.
So we don't mind if the crooks are stealing and robbing and making you fear for your life.
Right.
The important thing is to get the word out about hush money and Snorby Daniels. That is so lacking in seriousness, but it also ought to give us pause. People who don't care a whit about the crime in the streets and the potential for murder and mayhem, who are also then committed, right, to a stance that says we kill human beings no matter how innocent, right?
Yeah.
And whether they like it or not, that's basically what you're saying with abortion. And then we go back to the founding premise that says we are supposed to be a people dedicated to God-endowed unalienable rights. People always think that word rights means freedoms, but it doesn't. It means a use of freedom to do what's right according to who? According to the Creator God. And they can try to shrink out of it and say separation of church and state. No such thing, by the way. is actually warranted by the Constitution of the United States. No such thing warranted by the Declaration. A people that relies on the appeal to God to justify our authority, an authority not justified in history by philosophers and all of these other people. Nobody ever thought the people were capable of ruling themselves. But the United States has proven that we not only can do so, but we can do so on the way to becoming the greatest country possibly in the history of mankind.
But
they're attacking us at the very core of what is the basis for our claim of rulership, which is that our ability to do this and our authority to do it comes from God, not from power and not from the will and money of people who claim they are our masters now.
And I believe that this ruling class, that I also believe, of course, rigged the election. They stuffed the ballots. They ran the mules. They did all of that. They believe that they have the right to rule over us with a sense of tyranny. They use governments and regulators as instruments of terrorism, and the media as an instrument of terrorism against the people. And they believe that is their right, in essence. They don't believe in the Constitution, obviously. They don't believe in the Bill of Rights. They don't believe in the human principles that upon which this nation was founded. They believe that they can use any weapon to terrorize the people into compliance and obedience. And thus, they make up, they use democracy as a cover story for their crimes against our constitutional republic. What would you say to that?
I think that's very accurate. And I think that it's something that has actually been part of the plan for decades, because it is a bedrock understanding of the people who commit themselves to, whether you start with Marx and Lenin and those folks, you move over to Mao, you look at the Stalinist era, you read the works of people like Saul Alinsky, it's an end justifies the means mentality, in which the means are people who are to be manipulated in whatever way you have to manipulate them, lie to them, terrorize them, and ultimately even imprison and kill them, right? That's the record of all these communist, socialist type regimes. And they believe in this record. And that's why Jane Fonda could get out there the other day on The View. And when somebody asked, what should we do with these people? Meaning to say you and me, people who still believe in this country and its basis. And she said, kill them. And the other panelists looking at her aghast, and she looked daggers at them and held fast to what she had said. And I think people need to wake up. That's not just an episode. It is the practice of the people who value the mythical results of their ideology above the actual debt that we owe to one another under God's law, so that we will respect the lives and the proper right use of liberty by other human beings in our country. That's our bedrock. That's what makes us a nation. We're not a nation by ethnic background and all these other things. We're a nation by our common commitment to that which says that we're going to, in effect, do unto others as God would have us be done to. And when we claim that equation, I think we're basically adopting an archetypal American stance toward one another.
Well, you mentioned Jane Fonda, and it's an extraordinary arc that she demonstrates in the history of what she has said, because, you know, going back decades, she said it was wrong to kill Vietnamese civilians, a point that I at heart agree with. But now she says that it's right, in her view, to kill American civilians, those with whom she disagrees. So she's become the pro-war voice of the left, actually the pro-genocide voice. It's a selective killing, in her view. It's not to kill random Americans. She wants to kill only conservative Americans. So she is carrying out what would best be represented by the Marxist and communist leaders that have haunted areas of Southeast Asia for centuries, the genocidal killers who killed people and their families because they were political enemies. That's, I mean, but she represents the left, you know? The left is with her on this for the most part.
Well, unhappily, though, I think that she is speaking out We'll see what the aftermath turns out to be, right? But I think she is simply putting into words what is a bedrock premise of the ideology that the Democrat Party now represents.
Yes.
And that is an ends justify the means ideology. And it also is an ideology that has routinely drawn a distinction. If you are with us, you live. If you're not with us, you suffer and die. And they didn't just say it or threaten it. They did it time after time so that the death toll has to be ranging into the hundreds of millions, right? When you put the Stalinist and
Leninist
era together with the communist Chinese and all of that and so forth, these repressive regimes exact a toll in human life. And I think it worries me that a lot of Americans think that we're still watching business as usual, when in fact we're watching people who are reaching for what is for them the ultimate prize of total control. And they've even gone so far, I believe, as to be purging our military of elements that they believe will not respond to commands that violate the fundamental premises of our rights as human beings according to God.
So that brings us to the topic of the woke cult or the woke infiltration that's happened at the Pentagon, it's happened at the White House, the entire Biden administration. We even saw it recently in banking and finance, and I actually wanted to shift gears to this anyway, but Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, two of the three banks that failed roughly 2 weeks ago that were then bailed out in a non-bailout, as I call it, by Janet Yellen, the Treasury, the Fed, the government. But Yellen in particular has to make that decision. So they bailed them out. But I believe they were bailed out because they were woke banks. And as woke banks, it means they had lesbian awareness day, but they didn't have risk awareness day. And nothing wrong with lesbian awareness, don't get me wrong. But if you're a banker, you should probably do the banker's business and try to not lose people's money instead of spending all day on transgender parties or whatever your virtue signaling is. But they got bailed out. And I think they got bailed out because they were woke. Whereas if a conservative Christian bank, let's say, or that was the culture of a bank, they would be allowed to fail. So now we have the government subsidizing woke policies and woke institutions. So woke has become a kind of cultural plague upon the bureaucracy. What would you say to that?
Well, I think unfortunately, because that is now the premise of the Democrat Party's politics, you're exactly accurate in what you're portraying. And I think we have to spend, and I do, on my program, I spend a lot of time trying to get people in various areas to focus on the fact that what is being espoused is something that puts aside the notion that each of us is, first of all, in the eyes of God, a sacrosanct being, right? So that you cannot deprive us of life, liberty, or property unless we have done something wrong. And that should be the bedrock premise that we use, especially when it comes to government power. Because one of the deepest concerns that I think has gone to and fro in the course of American history, but people always had the opportunity to get it right, and they did time and time again, is the notion that you have to respect the God-endowed rights of each and every individual, understanding those rights to consist not in whims that we have to satisfy our appetites and lusts and hunger for this and that power and so forth. But no, a right in the sense of the Declaration, because it's according to God, right, according to the endowment of God, is a choice to do right as God sees it from the viewpoint of the Creator. The Creator means everything that He's created to go on corresponding to what He created, right? And that means that your life is sacrosanct. And when people violate your life, threaten your life, enslave your life, they're doing something fundamentally wrong. People have gone out and sacrificed their lives to uphold those American principles. And I think the Democrat Party, under the influence of these pernicious leftist ideologies, they are now in the process of abandoning that. And what do we become as a nation once those premises are removed?
Well, that's my next question. Where does this end if we don't somehow reverse this trend of whatever you want to call it, you know, the woke cult or the woke rot of America, where it's everything's made up now. Everything's just even banking rules and regulations, they just change them on a whim. Say, oh, well, today we bail out everybody. Tomorrow, maybe not. Who knows? I mean, how does any business person or rational person even engage in banking and finance, not knowing whether the rules are going to change tomorrow, not knowing if anything can actually be counted on, not knowing if the leaders are rooted in reason and rationality, or even if they believe that 2 + 2 = 4, because they don't. They don't. They're living in a delusional fairy tale world. You know, the emperor has no clothes. And how are you supposed to operate in this society? That's what infuriates me, even as a business owner. But I think it's a very common a perception of a major problem, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and I pray God, and I see evidence that a lot of people are waking up to the implications of it, because you're dealing with people who see no limit to the potential abuse of power if it is justified somehow by the ideological goals they mean to achieve. And I wish I, because now we have such a diverse population. You know, the other thing that strikes me about America, every time I think it through, is that we have become a nation of nations, right? In point of fact, meaning to say a people composed of people who come from every part of the globe, from every nationality, ethnic group you can name. Some part of those people is here in the United States. But they're not here in the United States simply in order to satisfy themselves, gratify themselves, live up to their own background from all those different countries, but to live up to something that, according to the ethos of our underlying premises, belongs to all human beings. So our first concern ought to be not with our race, this race and that race, but with the human race. Because we're founded on premises that commit us to do right by people, not because they're from our color or background or ethnic group or nation, but because they are all of them human beings coming from the hand of God, reflecting his purposes, and we need to respect that will, that goodwill, which he has shown toward all of us in our very existence.
Well, exactly. And this is precisely the message that America needs to heal and to come together and realize that we, the people, we are all being targeted. We are all being driven to violence and hatred and intolerance by the psychological terrorism operations of the media and the government itself. You know, Obama did tremendous damage to race relations in this country, as you well know. Highlighting differences instead of reminding us of what we have in common, that we, like you just did, well, we're all human, we're all created by God. We have almost everything in common, including our common desires. We all want to be free, and we want to experience abundance, or at least have the opportunity to experience it. We want to raise our children in healthy, clean environments where their minds are not polluted and their bodies are not mutilated. Why, I don't understand why we can't just get together on some core principles here with left and the right, but they're just driving division constantly. It's divide and conquer.
Well, see, because I think in several ways. One of them has to do with international relations and the fact that I think a lot of the things the Democrats are up to are now consistent with elements of what appears to be the anti-American strategy that is driving the warfare. I'll call it that advisedly, that the communist Chinese are now conducting against this country, and which Xi has pretty much articulated in various fora, in fora where he's, you know, talking to his fellow party members in China. He makes it very clear. Their objective is to topple us, to remove us from the position of influence that we've enjoyed in the course of the last century and more. And so I think that that ought to be first of all on people's minds. And they ought to ask themselves whether or not any ideology justifies the notion that we should give up a position that has been enjoyed probably by no other people comprising a nation in the history of mankind, where
Yes.
we wake up every day knowing that according to the basic premises of our way of life, if we don't cross the line into wrongdoing, our lives are sacrosanct. The law will act in defense of our lives. We can speak freely and act freely for the sake of those things we truly believe are for the benefit of our family and our country and our town and city and the people we live with. I think that that's something that, since it's so exceptional, we ought to be trying to focus Americans on, because I think it's something that we will all agree is precious. And instead, you have a party wholeheartedly committed, as you just were pointing out, I think accurately, to fomenting division so that we don't look at each other in those terms, raising up children so that we don't see each other in terms of our responsibility and obligation to do right by others, even as, according to God's will, right should be done by us. And I guess that's a lesson that I learned because I grew up in the context of the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King and speech after speech that people were making, emphasizing everything I just said.
Yes.
In order to try to get rid of what had been a bane on the country's existence since the time it was founded, right? And the founders knew it was going to cause trouble. And they also, I think, knew that the premises that they had articulated would help us out of that trouble. But now I don't see people choosing to preach first that doctrine that I was just articulating, which is the unifying doctrine. These people always talk, we're going to unify the nation, we're going to unify this, unify that. But what unifies us are the basic premises, the basic positive attitude toward our common humanity that I've been talking about. But I don't see our politicians lifting it up to the position of primacy where it belongs, because that's what makes us a nation. That's our solid common ground that we should commit to.
Yeah. No, well said. And I would just add, you know, conservatives have always been the pro-civil rights wing of America, you might say, in 1964 Civil Rights Act. And even today, you know, Dr. King's philosophies, they reverberate and resonate with conservative thinking far more than any left-wing Democrat thinking right now. When you say, you know, judge people by the content of the character, not the color of their skin, that's a meritocracy. That's what people like you and I espouse. Right. And yet the left is like, no. Punish people because of the fairness of their skin. Right.
And the whole critical race theory approach is an invitation to everybody to obsess with that.
Yes, exactly.
That the
exactly.
Focal point of your identity. And if you do, you're retreating from the common ground that we do, in fact, share by the goodwill of God, as well as the common sense that was shown by Americans for these last two and more centuries, where we were going out to fight those battles and where the premises were not being respected. Good-hearted people joined together even though it risked and cost their lives.
Yes.
And that was why we made progress. I think they're destroying the foundations of our progress in the name of an ideology that shows no such progress in
right.
the country where it reigns.
No, we are now living under the Jussie Smollett administration, it seems, where it's like everything is a victim hoax to try to exploit the situation and punish certain people. But look, I want to shift gears and ask you about Russia, because actually the last time we talked was about Russia, and quite some time has progressed since then. I'd like to ask your opinion, Dr. Keyes, about how you think the U.S. State Department in particular, but also the Biden administration, has handled the situation in Russia and where you think this is going with Ukraine. Your thoughts, please.
Well, to answer the first part of that question, I have to go back a bit, because I've always marveled at the fact that over the course of several administrations, and I'm thinking here post 1992 when the USSR fell apart, right? The USSR came apart. Different countries, you know, went their way and so forth. And the first thing that I don't understand is why we didn't, in that context, make a clear-sighted, absolute effort to cultivate a relationship with Russia. You know, as far back as Alexis de Tocqueville, the United States and Russia were compared, and Tocqueville predicted that both these countries were going to play a pivotal role in the future of humanity. Isn't that something?
Yes.
I think that role would be much better if we had taken advantage of that opportunity of change in the collapse of the Soviet Union, what was ostensibly the movement from a totalitarian ideological dictatorship to well, what they are pleased to call a democracy rooted in elections and the whole nine yards. I don't think we made much of an effort to build a relationship on that basis. Fast forward a little bit. I think it was perfectly sound policy for us to answer those countries that wanted to become part of NATO, right? And wanted to become part of, sort of the European Union, so forth and so on, because it's better when like-minded countries work together, especially those newly freed back into what had been a previous status where they were, in fact, in some cases, democratic regimes. That, I think, is correct. But again, we didn't work that out in such a way that it was not to be regarded, I think, because it didn't constitute any threat to Russia. A matter of fact, it could have been and should be a boon for the Russians. But I'm not sure we had leaders, especially on the ideological side, because I think a lot of people right now are more interested in how they foment the division and exacerbate the warlike possibilities of the future, because they think that's going to produce a change in favor of their ideological bent in the United States of America. Well, and that calculation prevails over the calculations of common humanity that I think are warranted right now.
Right.
Well, final point.
Okay.
I also think that in the face of what has to be condemned, right, because we have been trying to create an environment which everybody understands that you don't just go warring against other countries and that that's bad for everybody. That is true. It's a premise that I accept, and I think we ought to continue to stand for it. But are we absolutely sure that we thought through the actual nature of the conflict that has developed and the temptation that the Russians gave into and that Putin gave into that involved, at least in part, right, a concern for a situation that though we regard it, and it formally is, Ukraine is a separate nation, right? That is Ukraine a separate nation that has no history with Russia? You and I both know that's not true. Ukraine was an integral part of Russia. For what? From the late 1600s. That's a long time. That's longer than the United States has been in existence.
Exactly.
And you look at that fact and you say to yourself, something's going on here that's not as simple as they're making it. You know, I believe that step number one, our first responsibility was to make sure that we don't disappoint the expectations of security as well as a peaceful enjoyment of decent liberty by the people who became part of NATO, are anxious to be a part of what I would think of as our sphere of union in the world, right? I think we ought to be working at that. But we give first priority at this moment to something that I think tempts us to believe that it is more important to, flex our muscles over the Ukraine than it is to make sure we are building a solid basis not to disappoint the expectations of security of the nations that are entering NATO and that have entered NATO. I'm just reading it in the articles in the course of the past week. We are facing depletion of our military resources. They are facing that. If I were Putin, I'd be sitting there chuckling to myself. And if I were the Chinese, I'd be laughing. Not just chuckling, because they're looking at that situation and they're getting out of it exactly what pleases them, a weakening of the wherewithal of the United States that has consequences that I don't know whether Russia is going to be able to take advantage of them, but I think China already is. The mess on our border, everybody thinks it's just about illegal immigrants coming in and all the problems that that can cause. And yet, I'm reading report after report that a lot of the people coming into this country don't look particularly like they're from this hemisphere.
Exactly. But let me add this and ask you a question. Have you noticed the parallels between the way the State Department and the Biden administration treat Russia and the way they treat the American people. It's the same. So they deplatform Russia from SWIFT. What do they do in America? They tell big tech who to deplatform with censorship, right? Yeah. If they don't like your policies, you don't get a high ESG score. You don't get government contracts. If you have a high woke score, you get bailed out, but otherwise you get deplatformed. And the war that the Biden administration is waging against Russia through a variety of provocations and means, like flying B-52 bombers right near the border of Russia with a cruise missile test and saying, oh, what are you going to do about it? I mean, come on. It's a direct provocation into World War III. They do the same thing to the American people. For example, arresting Trump. This is a provocation to try to get people riled up and try to create another J6 type of, oh, look at the crazy Trump supporters. They want war. Well, we'll give them war. They're doing the same thing to us, Alan, that they do to Russia. Exactly the same thing. And I can't help but sympathize in some way with any country that is deplatformed, because we have been deplatformed. Well, we know what that's like.
You know, the question that I ponder in the context of the issue you're seeing is this. I don't approve of countries going into other countries without just cause and grievance that is manifest, right?
Sure.
The Russians, by the way, make the case that there was manifest grievance. And I know that a change did occur in the orientation of the government in the Ukraine, because, you know, Putin has a lot of faults, and they're always talking about them, but a desire to maintain godless communism was not one of his faults. He actually promoted the resurgence of the Russian Orthodox Church. And Ukraine, under the fellow who was in there in 2014, was it, when the change took place? He was going also to be encouraging Christianity. In terms of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, right? And he was kicked out of office during the Obama years. Obama being, like a lot of the Democrats now, anti-God secularists who actually believed that a lot of Christian people ought to be put in jail because we believe in God and in the premises that flow from that, that are the bedrock foundation of the United States and preclude dictatorship by little party cliques. And so forth and so on. Now, what I'm getting to is this. Are we absolutely sure that the moment is not already arrived, because the danger, I think, is acute, when our failure to do something about the assault on our border is exposing us in such a way that it will become an issue of our utmost national security to go in and clean up a mess that is polluting this country with drugs and death and crime? See, we're going to face a decision at some point, because the Mexican government was cooperative and is now proving less cooperative, right?
Yeah.
In terms of actually meeting that threat, we're going to have to ponder whether we're going to have to take care of it ourselves, because we're not going to be able to live with this indefinitely. It will kill us if we try. And so I look forward to that, and I say, you know, perhaps we shouldn't be beating the drum so hard without looking at the circumstances, that because we ourselves face circumstances where we're going to have to make a decision about what we do to defend our integrity of our nation against a threat that is based in the territory of our neighbor. I don't know what that is going to lead to, but I know we're going to have to take it very seriously.
Along those lines, Dr. Keyes, and think about your final thoughts on this. We're about to wrap up today's interview, but author Leo Homan, his book was just banned by Amazon, and it's called Stealth Invasion. And it was a book that documented this invasion of the United States across an unprotected border. and how it's being covered up and allowed to take place, as you were just speaking to. And it's not just that our government and our left-wing culture, they're not willing to defend this nation, but that they even, again, deplatform and ban authors who are documenting the problem. This is the equivalent of, let's say, after 9/11, banning anybody from talking about 9/11, or after Fukushima saying, oh, you're not allowed to talk about radiation. I mean, how has it come to this level of insanity where you're not allowed to talk about problems? You can't say the vaccines have harmed anyone, right, without being deplatformed. And it's Amazon now. This is a digital book burning. This is the worst rendition of the Orwellian nightmare that we always feared would come. And here it is. It's here now today, right now. Your thoughts. And then think about wrapping this up as well.
Well, I think, again, you're right on the mark. And you are pointing to what I think is the challenge that we're actually faced with. And it raises a question that is deeply disturbing. See, because people, I read the newspapers every day and I see the way that the Biden administration is being portrayed. And people wonder, why would they have elected somebody that you know, is a little bit, well, I don't want to say it because I'm rather aged myself, but is a little bit, you know, seems to be beyond the stage where he can deal with all the rigors. And we're supposed to be concentrating on that and so forth and so on. And yet, that is supposed incompetence could very well be a cover for the fact that when you look into the affairs that are being revealed about Hunter Biden and the Biden family's relations with the communist Chinese and so forth, you know, what if we actually elected a president who isn't actually, you know, on our side?
Yeah.
And what if this whole show of bumbliness and nonsense is actually a cover for what is actually going on, which is an astute betrayal of the most profound and existential interests of the whole people of the United States that will take history's breath away? They will write books about it, the fall of the United States, at the hands of such a betrayal. We're not even thinking about this yet. And yet I think it deserves to be thought through and must be thought through thoroughly, or we will end up experiencing that fate.
Well said. And I would just emphasize, yes, they will write books about it. And then after they do that, Amazon will ban books about it because you won't be allowed to tell the truth about any of this. So Dr. Keyes, in addition to your Brighteon.tv appearances, where can people find your work?
Well, I still keep up my blog, loyaltoliberty.com, though I don't write for it, but I keep it there. And over the course of several years, I wrote a whole lot that has a bearing on our present situation. So I think it would repay a visit to loyaltoliberty.com. If you have the time.
Got it.
Because I think that that's one of those things that we need to do. We need to encourage people to do what our kids are no longer being encouraged in school to do, which is first think through the fundamentals of our nation and our success as a nation, the things that we've overcome in the way of evil. You know, all these Democrats spend all their time fighting slavery in the 19th century. And I'm sitting there looking at their behavior and I'm saying, well, that's what we won't notice, that you're imposing it on us and working with people who want to impose it on the world in the 21st century. We need to wake up to this. And I hope the writing that I have done and the kind of discussions that I have on the air now and the speeches I give as I go around the country are all of them aimed at getting people to focus on this essential point, because I think our survival depends on it.
Well said, and I think your contributions to this debate and discussion are extraordinary and desperately needed in our time. And I always appreciate you, Dr. Keyes. Thank you for taking the time today to join me, and I hope we get a chance to do this again soon.
I hope so. It's always a pleasure and a joy to be with you.
Absolutely. You as well. Let me know next time you're in Texas. We'll get you in studio here. We'll do this face-to-face. That'll be even more fun.
That will be.
Okay. All right. Well, take care. Keep up the amazing work. God bless you, Alan Keyes. And folks, we are fortunate to have Dr. Alan Keyes in our midst, in our time. We need minds like his and voices like his, voices of courage and truth, in order to challenge the deception and lies and the chaos that's being intentionally strewn about in order to bring our nation down. So here on Brighttown.com, we bring you the truth and courageous voices like Alan Keyes. So thank you for your support. Brighttown.com, feel free to share this video on other platforms. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining us today. God bless you all. Take care. A global reset is coming, and that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you, simply because I want like-minded people to survive.